on the give up. Bo Williams closed the punt, took a kick at the shot clock. Cavs in trouble. Backdoor cut by LeBron, covered up. Barrichello has to fire a prayer. Got it! Anderson Barrichello! Can you believe it?
Kyrie, a little touche on Curry's stop side. Irving goes inside to Barrichello, lays it up and in. We're tied.
A steal. Here comes Douglas, trying to get to the rim.
Blocked from behind by Barrichello. A Portuguese chase down.
Barrichello, Oscar, down, and he smashed it! 89-71, LeBron pocket pass to Barrichello, that's how they roll!
Clap, clap, clap.
Slap, slap, slap. I was thinking Jimmy Neutron's too bad.
I was too.
Leaving that in. All right, hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs. Evan Damrell's with me as always. We also have our friend of the program, Mark Schindler from Indie Cornrows, also from Fear the Sword. Mark, what's up, buddy?
I'm good. That we certainly watched a basketball game. Things happened. I don't know if they were good or bad. I guess it kind of depends on which vantage point you're looking from. If you're just looking from an observational viewpoint, I think it was just bad all around, but it was a game, and there were some cool things that happened in it.
Yeah, no, it certainly was a game. I was waiting for Chris to take the lead there, but you pointed this out for sure. Making Jeremiah Martin play actual 15 minutes of play, finish the night with 3 points on 1-6 shooting, was certainly something for Cleveland. I think Keelan Martin is now the new boogeyman for the Cavs this time around.
He scored as many points tonight as he has in the entire month of May leading up to tonight. So in six games, he'd scored 25 points, and he can 25 tonight. So if that's not indicative of where we're at with the last 2 weeks of the season, I'm not really sure where else we're at, but you know,
that's totally fair.
It was really cool to see him get his flowers tonight and play, cause he's had a pretty inconsistent role.
Yeah. Well, it's better than TJ McConnell almost getting a triple double in the first half. So it's certainly something, right?
Facts. Okay, so this game was weird. I think both teams ultimately just got what they wanted out of it, right? Like, the Pacers get a win.
I wanted to smoke a cigarette after the third quarter because that was so much happening at once.
And then the Cavs lose, which is good for their lottery odds.
Hell yeah, brother. And they knocked the Raptors out of the playoffs. It's just, you know, something about that. There's something about the Cavs wearing black and knocking Toronto out of the playoffs. You know what I'm saying, Chris?
Can I get
a fist bump and a cupcake, brother? Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So before we dive into this game, and the structure of this podcast is going to be, we're talking about Cavs Pacers. Mark's going to take over segment two in case you're listening on the new corner feed. You're like, who's this jackass talking on my podcast?
His name is Chris Manning. You can find him at CWM Rights on Twitter.
It's actually at Cavs Canada. Thank you very much. Direct all your complaints there. Then
he does a little freelance work for Outkick, you know.
Oh God. Oh, okay. Evan, well, that's Evan, it. The pot
Evan,
is over.
Evan just crossing the lines as usual. But as we're recording, and then third segment, we'll talk about some Cavs-y things and sort of the similarities between here. But as we're recording this, in terms of lottery odds, the Cavs are 4.5 games back of the Houston Rockets. For the worst record, they have the same record as the Oklahoma City Thunder at 21-48. And then they're a game back of the Detroit Pistons, who are 20-49. Neither Detroit or Oklahoma City played on Monday night. And the Houston Rockets have, as we're recording, just tipped off against the Portland Trailblazers. So, guys, MVP. Mark, who's your MVP? You're obviously maybe you'll pick a Pacers person, I would assume, but who's your MVP from this game?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess it's probably Caris LeVert. There were a lot of players who played well. I actually thought, I mean, Domas, it's tough to not say that it's Domas. He had 21, 20, and 9, but I actually felt like the Pacers ran a lot through Caris because Cleveland did a really good job of trying to take away a lot from Domas. I mean, you could see how much they were honing in on him in the paint, and a lot of what happened with the Pacers ran through Caris. I mean, it was very much so like just Caris and Domas doing the heavy lifting. And then Keelan Martin to close, as Evan pointed out before we got on here. So I think I would go Caris, but I'd also just say from my own standpoint, Isaac Okoro, because I don't know how you guys have felt. I actually haven't asked you guys about this, but over the last stretch, like the last probably 2 weeks, he's really started to do a lot more with the ball in his hands, and especially in the drive game. And that's been really impressive. He had some awesome finishes tonight. both out of the pick and roll and just off catch and drives. And I was really impressed, and I continue to be really impressed with him. And he took 8 threes. So it's wins all around, man. I was pretty happy with tonight.
Yeah. No, I think Isaac was super impressive. And before Chris can pick him, he's my MVP pick tonight for Cleveland.
I'm still Colin picking. Sexton.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to talk about Colin Sexton.
Colin Sexton is great. 25 points on an efficient 7 of 26 shooting for those listening at home. He was 10 of 12 from the line, so that's pretty great. 8 dimes. Give him credit where credit's due for that. Sexton deserves his flowers. But no, Isaac was just super duper impressive tonight, and I'll talk about my play and what made him so impressive, but it was just a lot of things. In the first half, he didn't really have a huge offensive output scoring-wise, but he was making an impact in terms of just his playmaking, and it's really fun to watch him just work as a tertiary playmaker, and maybe he's found a little bit of a niche and a groove with the Cavs. Hopefully it's not requiring him to play 42 minutes a night or like he has in some of these last few games. But no, this was a really good game for Isaac, a double-double, and it was a lot of fun. Chris, who's your MVP pick?
I'm just going to go Okoro as well because...
Not going to go Dean Wade?
Cop out. Look, Dean Wade had a solid enough game.
Not going to go Fiondu Kabengele, who had 9 points, 4 assists.
I put you down hard rebounds, when you texted me about him while we're
I just ignored it and kept on keeping on, so...
Can I just say, I don't think he'll be listening to this because he has better things to do at this time, but Lucas Hahn, every time he tells me that he still gets a Kabengele, like fans tweeting at him every time Kabengele has a good game. Like they're just like incessant that he's like a really, really good NBA player and that Lucas is just like wrong. And Lucas, who runs 213 Hoops and is a very good Clippers follower, where Kabengele came from.
Kabengele is the Colin Sexton of Clippers fans, except Colin Sexton's good.
It's like, like what's below Dollar General?
Is there anything like the
Dollar Tree?
The stuff you pull out of the dumpster? I don't know. Like
it's a bad vibe. But look, Okoro had one. R.I.P. Kmart. One of the things about Okoro that I just think is like if it hits next year is if the handle's like 5% tighter, there's just stuff that is going to be really, really there for him. And I think that's really interesting. Like he's becoming pretty comfortable driving. He's becoming very comfortable, I think, like putting his shoulder into guys and using his strength. And if he just figures out where his handle is just going to be a little tighter and unlock some stuff, I think, like the 3-point shot, I think, is already kind of looking cleaner. Like the form looks much better than it did even on tape and stuff. But I think that the handle is going to be the thing. I'm all in on the handle being kind of the thing. Stat of the night: mine's Colin Sexton taking 12 free throws. Like I just want to claim that because that's awesome and that's really what you want. I think that's like such a key thing for Colin is being a guy that he's not obviously going to take 12 a night. I would assume, but like if he can ramp that up and become a guy that can take a lot of free throws, become a extremely potent player in that regard, and like make them at above like the 84-85% clip he's made them for his career, that's just like another way he can level up and maybe something we haven't talked about enough, or at least I haven't.
So this one's easy for me. Keelan Martin was 0.2% from 69% shooting from the floor.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, he had 25 points, which I believe that's a career high in the NBA. Just had a really, really good all-around game. So that's my stat of the night.
That's a great stat. And, I thought
it was a very nice stat.
Very nice indeed. But my stat of the night, it's funny because it came on a three-pointer, but Jared Allen reached 3,000 career points tonight when he hit a three-pointer against Indiana with about, I think, 5:25 off the top of my head to go in the first quarter. So just a neat stat, neat shout-out for Jared. He's kind of had an up-and-down past few weeks, so just for him to have a big moment like that, it's pretty nice. And hopefully he's with the Cavs long-term to continue to add to those statistical outputs.
All right, play of the night. Evan, you have one that I know you staked your kind of whole rep on this pod about it. What is it?
Well, I said thar be my play of the night. I'm talking like a pirate when I texted you that, but I'm actually changing it. It's when Isaac Okoro hit that step back three over Aaron Holiday. That was pretty slick. I don't know. It was just it's refreshing to see Isaac be really confident taking shots from the perimeter, considering how far he's come from the beginning of his rookie season when it took the entire coaching staff and the better part of the roster to implore him to take threes. I just want Isaac to be a little bit more selfish, and yeah, he made it, but like Mark pointed out, Isaac Okoro was also 3 of 8 from three for the night. Like, I wanted to be a little more selfish, and he has a little flourish to it. It makes it even more fun.
Mark, what is yours?
I'm not gonna lie, I'm still choosing Mike. You go first.
Yeah, so here's my Dean Wade shout out. Dean Wade, third quarter, 3:30 to go in the quarter. There's a loose ball that just careens. I don't even think the ball hit the rim. And the ball ends up at his feet. And there's like 2 seconds left on the shot clock. Yeah, because Okoro got blocked. And Dean Wade catches like no hesitation, no qualms about shooting from like 3 feet behind the arc and buries a three. This is how he got his first ever triple-double. Or double-double, excuse me. He has not gotten into the...
Did I miss something here?
Dean Wade is actually coming for Russell Westbrook. That's coming up next on our Schlock radio show. But no, like, this was just like Dean Wade just doing Dean Wade things in terms of just launching three-pointers, and you love to see it.
Yeah, it's a good pick.
Yeah, I think mine would probably be right around 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in the third quarter. I had to go back through my notes because I wasn't remembering exactly where it was at. Caris LeVert had just a beautiful drive and kick, totally collapsed the defense. I'm pretty sure that the shot was missed, but regardless, it's been huge for him. He's really opened up a lot in terms of just getting to the rim more. I mean, he still takes a lot of those short mid-range pull-ups, but just the way that he's collapsed defenses and been able to capitalize on it has been huge. Caitlin Cooper, who's, of course, you guys know, like one of the best writers in the NBA. I have the great fortune of working with her. She wrote about his reads and how he's progressed on those since he's been in Indiana, and it continues to be something really impactful. I mean, he had, again, 10 assists tonight. It's just assist numbers aren't everything, but it's routinely been a thing with him. So that was probably my play for me.
Guys, this was pretty good late season basketball, all things considered.
Yeah, it really was. I said this is a game that the doctor ordered for the Cavs. They were competitive until the very end, but they're still in the catbird seat for the draft lottery and, you know, possibly getting a top pick, or at least in the top four. They have a 50.3% chance right now in order for that to happen. But this was good. It's still weird to think that the Cavs were nipping at Chicago's heels like a couple weeks ago for that playing spot. Now they've cratered all the way back down to earth. But it's been a weird stretch, but it's been fun to see the end results.
Yeah. No, I agree. I there were like little things that you can pick out, even though we were like joking at the beginning. I think I always try and be pretty optimistic in looking at every game for every team. And, you know, I think there are always little things to find. Like, I love Broderick Thomas's minutes tonight. I know he played a lot. But
this is, like, the best he looked. He had a little sauce on, like, a wraparound assist in the fourth. Yeah. Like
he shows real ball-handling chops. He got to the rim. Obviously missed all of his threes, but I like his defense, too. I've liked him. I don't know if he's going to be around next year or anything, but regardless, I think he showed he's, like, an NBA player.
Contrary to what Joe Vardon thinks, the Cavs actually know what they're doing when it comes to developing G League prospects and end of rotation players, but hey, whatever.
Well, explicitly like that Anderson Varejao didn't keep the Cavs from like signing those kinds of players.
It just takes like 30 seconds to scroll through Cleveland's rotation right now with how banged up they are and realize they're playing the majority of G League and two-way players that have been converted. Like, The Athletic could pay me way less to do a little bit more research. I mean,
I will take Joe Vardon.
But that's why salary. I am paid by Fear the Sword.
And to Antegna.
Also worth noting, too, the Cavs took 39 threes tonight, which has got to be close to a season high, right?
That feels like
they've been shooting, but... it feels like barely 20 a game the whole year. So it only takes half the roster being out, but it's something.
Mark, Mark, next up, we're going to see some second side action.
Oh wow, I think that's a little too far. We're almost 70 games into the season. And it hasn't happened once yet, so I'm not sure that it's going to happen now. But you know, a guy can hope.
Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is the perfect place to start or join the conversation about the NBA. You'll find fans just like you in Locker Room for watch parties, debates, post game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news rumors. If you want to join us later this week, I think we'll be going on Thursday for our Locked On Cavs Locker Room. Last week, we had a bunch of great guests, including Danny Cunningham and Nick Trezino and a whole bunch of other folks. You might be able to chat with Evan and I and be featured on Locked On Cavs through our Locker Room conversations. Again, join us this week, Thursday evening, sometime after 5 p.m. EST. We'll send out the deets on social. Go download the free Locker Map right now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the NBA group for the latest updates. Follow at CBMWrights and AmNotEvan to be notified when our rooms go live. I know you're not going to want to miss it. We'll be planning again to go live this week, Thursday, sometime after 5 p.m. EST. Can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Cleveland Cavaliers. See you there. Locker Room, changing the way we talk about sports.
Do we want to talk some Pacers now?
Yeah, no, take over. Pull a Caris LeVert, you know, just run in some ISO.
Like Colin Sexton's playmaking. We got you, Mark.
I think I'm not even going to get into the Sexton. It's not. I can't do it tonight.
Doing it because you're here.
I just love Sexton.
Fun as heck.
Mark, yeah. I'm going to just ask before we get into the paper. I'm just going to ask you this now. I tell Evan this and I explicitly say, Evan, I want a yes or no answer. And then he doesn't give me a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. Contrary to what our banter online is, I truly like Evan. You're the best. I just want to make sure you know that publicly. I'm saying that publicly.
Yeah, tell it to my followers.
Anyway, all right. So, yeah, Sexton's max, 5 years, 167.9. Over 4, 129.7. Would you give him that max contract? Either one of those max contracts?
No.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the Pacers.
Oh, I was going to say, just going to give a number. All right. Yeah.
We will have you back on for the Sexton Wars because this will be a thing we talk about. And some of the stuff, if you're the sword we're going to be doing, is going to be talking about this Colin Sexton thing because... Guys, it's almost the offseason for us, and we're excited. But all right, let's talk about the Pacers.
All right, yeah. So I'm going to lead off with a couple things, but then I also want you guys to ask me questions because, believe it or not, crazy shit happened in Indiana this last week, if you weren't aware. I mean, I thought the biggest thing where I was coming from tonight, this is not me trying to be like, oh, woe is me covering a team. Like, it's awesome. I love doing it. It's so murky at the end of this year because – I just don't know what to take away from some of these. Like Aaron Holiday didn't have a good game. Edmund Sumner didn't really have a good game either. He didn't even play that much. O'Shea Brissett has kind of quietly not been as good since he signed his deal. I'm not saying that that's because he signed a deal, but he expended a ton of energy playing that stretch of games, and things have just, you know, fallen back down to earth for him a little bit. So there isn't really a lot to take away from some of the younger guys. And they're also just trying to grind out wins playing Domas and Caris 37, 38 minutes. I just don't and given the state of everything going on, I kind of come away scratching my head and just not really sure how I'm even supposed to analyze what I'm looking at. Goga Batadze had probably his worst game of the year. It was a weird game developmentally. Like, obviously a win is a win. But just in looking at what's best for the team overall, I don't know. Obviously you want them to string together wins and try and find their way. But again, it's just really tough because in looking at where everything is with the organization right now, I'm just not sure what that means because, well, he's probably not going to get fired in season. I'll have some serious questions if Nate Bjorken isn't fired as soon as the season ends, frankly, given everything that's come out and stuff that's come up behind the scenes as well. So that's quite a lead off for me. What questions do you guys have off of that? Because that is state of the Pacers pretty much.
Do you, as a fan and someone who analyzes this team on a day-to-day basis, do you think the team regrets letting Nate McMillan go at this point? I mean, the offense was vanilla to stale vanilla under him, but at least they were more competitive than they were under Bjorkgren, and he had the respect in the locker room.
Yeah. What I've thought about it with Nate, part of the issue is that he had kind of lost the locker room. His voice had fallen on deaf ears. As we're seeing right now with Nate Bjorkgren, that clearly is not something that flies or works. As you guys noticed with John Beilein last year, that's just not something that you can condone or keep going with as an organization. I think Nate McMillan is a fantastic coach. I mean, we're seeing that with Atlanta. He's frankly a better coach than Nate Bjorkgren. I don't think that that's a hot take, even slightly. But I do get like frustrated when, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but just in general, like whenever a Pacer loss happens or all the stuff came out last week, they're like, oh, well, I bet the Pacers regret firing Nate McMillan. I'm like, no, they don't regret firing Nate McMillan. They they're not going to say it, but they should regret not doing an extensive enough search or not really nailing their candidate. That's where it comes down to for me, because I think it was time for a change. But also, this is not exactly the change that I think they had imagined, and definitely not that the fans had imagined, and certainly not the players had imagined either. But yeah, that would be where I'm at on that. But so, I would say too, the team would be better this year if Nate were the head coach still.
So I like understand the process of how you get to Bjorkgren, right? Like I sort of understand how you like, okay, you look at your roster, you look at what hasn't worked and sort of how you played under McMillan. And like, I think Nate McMillan's obviously a good coach and you know, whatever the reason was, like I understand how you go, okay. Like, at least as we understood it when the hiring happened, it's like, okay, we're going to move on from McMillan. We're going to bring in a guy who's going to run stuff more a la Nick Nurse. We are going to try to modernize our offense. You know, you probably even knew at that point, like, you're going to move off from Oladipo, just kind of how that situation was brewing. And you obviously works out to get LeVert, but it's like, okay, like, we're going to continue to sort of tinker. We're not going to, like, go all the way down. We're not going to totally pull this up. We're not going to, like, you know, we can sort of from the outside speculate sort of how and why the Hayward stuff kind of fell apart, but it did. And then you sort of, you roll back through bonus another year. I think you look at like how you get there as we understood it then. And it's like, this makes sense to me. I think it all sort of unravels when it's like, you find out that like Bjorkgren was a bit like friends with an executive who made the hire for a long time. And like, that's sort of how he ends up getting the job. Like with, wow. Like I, you know, like the, that, the, that's
the
just parallels, like
the Bayline are staggering right now.
Well,
there it is. There's that Chris Manning brain fart.
Yeah. Just brain, just brain destroyed live on the podcast. But it's like, I understand like how you make the hire. It just seems like, and Caitlin's written like a ton of great stuff about this. Like you listen to Lockdown Pacers and stuff like there and listen to talking to Mark, like, it just seems like everything just sort of like unraveled. And then like, I don't, and like, you obviously haven't had TJ Warren at all, which is like an extremely important piece to the team. You know, like, there's just a lot of stuff that just sort of didn't break right. And then the Bjorkgren thing is, it just adds to the fire as your season sort of unravels. Like, you're probably going to make the play-in tournament and then like lose. And then like, you got to go hire another coach again. And is it like, is it D'Antoni? Do you course correct and go back to McMillan's side? It just presents more challenges, but it's like, I guess it's just sort of like the reality of like, if you're going to play the middle, so to speak, if you're Indiana, like, this is probably like a possible outcome that you have to be prepared for, even if like you're hoping Bjorkgren is going to like modernize the team in a way.
Mark, just to ape off Chris real quick. Is it even possible for Indiana to go back to McMillan? Like, I don't think it is.
Not saying back to McMillan. Oh, I'm saying like, yeah, a McMillan. Yeah, I mean, like, a McMillan type.
Oh, that's what I thought you meant. I'm like,
No. Like,
that is truly Cavaliers-esque. Like, going back to Mike Brown.
Look, they can hire Mike.
Never forget. Well, he lasted what, 8 games, 9 games in the second stint?
Mike Brown?
Yeah.
He lasted an entire season, then he was fired.
Who was it that only lasted 9 games?
Ty got fired very shortly into a season. Anyway, but like, yeah, I mean, like, you could course correct back to that kind of coach. And like, finally, like, Mike Brown would be that kind of coach, and I think has ties to the Pacers in some capacity.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. I would like go hire Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, I don't know where I'm at with everything with getting a new coach. I mean, I not to like cut off, but I think I will just wait until I know for sure that he's going to get fired. Like, I think he's going to, and I personally, if he isn't, I will have like some qualms with the organization and the way that they're handling things, and already have, of course, because it's not just like it. If it's just basketball, it's not something I would get, you know, super invested in. Like, I mean, of course I'm going to be invested in it because that's what I want to do. This is, you know, I take this really seriously, but I mean, to have all this scathing stuff come out about how he handles people personally, that rubs me the wrong way. And that's the kind of thing where I don't think you can allow that to go on as an organization. I mean, he's basically on reporting, like he has completely alienated himself from everyone, from players, from the staff, from support staff who aren't even part of coaching. I mean, like you, that just like you can be a bad coach and I'll be like, okay, fine. Let's give you a second year and see if things change. Because like you said, Chris, you're right. I mean, it's been a weird year. Injuries. I mean, this season is arguably weirder than last year in some regards with how the pandemic's affected it. But if you're just an asshole, no, I don't think you deserve a second chance, to be completely honest. And based on reporting, that's kind of where we're at. And I don't know. But in terms of looking at a new coach, like it's like I don't think that they're going to blow up the roster. Like that's not my interpretation, unless things are really bad in the locker room, which I don't. I mean, my read isn't that they're that level, because I don't think that this team is interested in tanking. Clearly they're not. Otherwise they would not, you know, they would have not, like, you can't just find a way to lose a game against the Cavs who are down 9 men, but point being, like, they would be a worse team this year. They would be resting guys more in certain ways. Like they're not trying to actively lose. That's pretty clear. Like if they were fine with doing that, there wouldn't be, you know, some of the things happening this year wouldn't be happening. And, you know, they really wanted to get to the next level. And that's what was so weird about this year, because I think there was this idea that Nate Bjorken would come in and you would get the non-vanilla offense and have a lot more going on there and not really have a drop-off defensively. Because this team was sixth in the NBA defensively last year. They were third the year before. Miles Turner was a deserving defensive player of the year candidate. Obviously wasn't going to finish ahead of Gobert, and the injuries haven't helped that. But point being, like they have almost the exact same roster from last year. And they take this drastic of a step back. I think that's something that you can't really, like, I mean, I guess you can, but we didn't really know or understand that that was going to be the thing coming in. Like I thought, with Bjorken coming in, maybe they would change some of the defensive principles, but my ideology was, okay, well, they'll be maybe a little bit more multiple in what they do defensively, but most importantly, they're just going to be like way better offensively, and they'll be top 10 in both. Maybe there'll be a slight defensive drop off, but that's the formula for being a good team. And I mean, it reminds me a lot of the spread offense in football, like especially watching Big 12 games. I don't know how much you guys watch football. I'm not really into football anymore, but just like when it was really starting to happen in the early to mid 2010s, when the spread offense was really proliferating, like all these teams would just go crazy, crazy pace on offense. And then their defense gets housed within, you know, it's not even their defense is bad, but they have to play 40 minutes of an hour long game. And you know, maybe it's not always that drastic, but point being, like you just, I think there's something to wearing yourself out by doing so much offensively. Like, I think they gotta, it just in terms of looking at, there's not really a way that I can track it, but in terms of like just distance traveled on offense, they have to be close to near the top in the NBA in the amount of cutting and everything that they have going on. It's not just that. I mean, they push the hell out of the ball in transition off of every miss. Like, I know this is a really long rant, but point being, like, just so many things happen this year that I don't think you were accounted for, and some of them are tough because you can't really account for them. But yeah, it is a state of the Pacers is not great, but also not like the worst. But regardless, this last week has just really thrown everything up into the air in a way I wasn't expecting to happen this year.
No, I totally get that. And just looking ahead now, we've already tackled the coaching situation, but largely, Indiana's quote-unquote big three is going to be Brogdon, Sabonis, Turner. At least that's how it's going to be payroll-wise. Do you think the Pacers might I mean, LeVert, too. LeVert's being paid a decent amount as well. And do you think the Pacers would shake things up a little bit, especially with, like, Turner and Sabonis? Because, like, Sabonis has looked awesome in this stretch. And, I mean, he was incredible against Cleveland tonight. Like you said, he had 20-20, and then he had 9 assists, so he flirted with the triple-double. Do you think the Cavs try and move on from Miles and then maybe – or not, sorry, not Cavs. The Pacers try to move on from Miles and see if they can try and recoup some assets for him and maybe try and make Doma the focal point, maybe put like a more traditional stretch four next to him or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just given how the year's gone, I mean, what are they now? They're 32 and 35, I think. like this is not how they wanted the year to go. They've talked about that, and I mean they have to make a move. I thought there was, you know, there was a, maybe enough there last year at the end of last year to justify breaking up the Turner Sabonis combo, and they wanted to try it again with the new coaching staff, and I understand that, and I stand by that. I think that's a reasonable decision. But point being, I just think we've seen enough this year to know that it can work against you know, lower levels to even like, you know, some of the mid-tier teams, like if you're playing Atlanta or I actually don't think that they were both healthy for the Knicks other than the first game, but when you play the top eight teams in the NBA, it hasn't worked. And it's really struggled. And I think that's enough to know that it's time to move on. And I mean, like you mentioned with Gordon Hayward, they tried to move on in the offseason. They said that they were confident still in moving forward with the two, but clearly, you know, the moves speak a little bit louder than the press conference to me. So I think that the Turner Sabonis pairing, if they're still together at the beginning of next year, I'd be pretty surprised.
Chris, do you have any other questions about the state of the Pacers?
I would like to wonder if there's like a draft night thing where like a team is like, hey, we'll take Miles Turner and like, we'll, you can move up in the lottery or something. That's where I would like wonder if that's like the swing point for them.
That'd be interesting, because I thought a lot about like this year to me is really important for them, because like they do have a really good core when they're all healthy, which is a thing that I feel like I'm saying every year. That is just the way that things work. Unfortunately, they have a lot of guys who are kind of injury prone, and that's been a factor. But this is like the opportunity. You can get a really good player. They haven't drafted in the lottery since Miles Turner himself in 2015. This is a real opportunity to add a young player to the group who can contribute now, maybe in a smaller capacity, but also like on a rookie scale deal, be a real contributor in 2 or 3 years. That's the kind of stuff that makes it kind of makes or breaks a contention window, whatever you're contending for. So I'm excited for that and to see how that might work. And especially with how this draft is too, as I've like dove in a lot more, like the sheer difference of who you're drafting between, you know, 5 and 8 compared to if you're down at, let's say, if they get unlucky with the lottery and they end up with like the 14th pick or something, like that's a huge difference. I think that's something that certainly is in play, and I'm excited for that. We'll have to do some draft talk eventually later on, this summer or something, because I'm looking forward to it.
Chris, and I'll be right back with our conversation with Mark, but let me give you a quick word from our sponsor, Rock Auto. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much on the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at RockAuto.com.
I also want to tell you about our friends at BetOnline, the official betting partner of the Locked On Podcast Network. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. There's tons of great stuff going on in the world of sports right now, including, obviously horse racing has somehow been impacted by cancel culture, which is weird, but you have the NBA, you have Major League Baseball, you have UFC, you have a whole bunch of great stuff. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC/MMA action. Before the next pitch or the first punch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON. Yeah, I think we all are. Evan, let's talk about the Cavs. You're up.
I mean, boy, what's there to talk about? This team's on a slow death march to finish out their season. I don't think they win another game. There is some meaningful basketball to be. I know Jaylen Brown is out for the season with a wrist injury, which is a huge bummer. Which
sucks. Yeah.
Big time. And they play Boston Wednesday for the last home game of the season. Then they're in Washington Friday, and Russell Westbrook had a 20-20 game with points and assists and almost beat the Hawks tonight. And then they wrap up the season Sunday, May 16th in Brooklyn. I don't think the time's been officially announced yet, but the game started noon because there's going to be 15 games with all 30 teams on Sunday. Chaos. It's going to be great. I'm not a fantasy basketball guy, but I feel for those who might have some implications on Sunday. So, I don't know, man. Mark, how do you feel about the current state of the Cavs? Like, they're such a weird team. Like, my biggest gripe is I wish they could just be a bad team that could be quietly going on about their business and just slowly finish this season. They've lost 11 in a row at this point and likely going to lose 14 in a row to finish the season. Like, all the extracurriculars are just so tiring to me.
Yeah, I agree. What's so weird about this season too, I think this, like, the first 20-25 games was the best I felt about the Cavs from just an outsider's perspective.
It's weirdly enough when Andre Drummond was trying too.
Exactly. I mean, like, I wrote about that in the piece earlier this year. Like, that was the best I felt about the Cavs in forever. And then the Jared Allen trade happens, and a couple games after, you know, that goes downhill. And there, I mean, you know, we've hashed that out on pod before. But point being, like, this has just felt like completely different seasons, because after Drummond gets traded and that drama's over, the team looks kind of okay again. And then they've dealt with injuries and everything's happened with Kevin Love that, you know, whether or not it's been overblown or overhyped or just whatever, it's been there. And it's you, when you're, like you just mentioned, when you're a team that is, you know, lottery bound, you shouldn't be getting this kind of the amount of negative coverage that's coming up for a lottery team is like, I wouldn't say it's troubling, but it's like, it's bothersome. Like, why can't we just do something normally when we're tanking or not even tanking, but just trying to build into being a better team? I mean, it's frustrating.
I think this is like sneak, like, I think this team is still figuring itself out, but I think this offseason is sneakily important for them in a lot of ways. Yeah. Whatever kind of contract Jared Allen ends up with will matter to future cap space. Like, what happens with Kevin Love is going to matter. The Sexton extension is going to matter. Like, the draft pick is going to matter. There's just a lot of pivotal things that you're sort of going with. And also just like, look, like, you know, I don't expect like leadership changes. So it'll be interesting to see like how much of a leash do Altman and Bickerstaff could be making, and Altman in particular could be making these very pivotal decisions for the franchise. Like, do they get leeway beyond another year? Like, I mean, historically the Cavs have not been an especially patient organization. I mean, are they gonna, like, what is the runway for them sort of look like? There's a lot we just, I think, don't quite understand about what they're hoping to accomplish in the next, you know, year or so, into 2 years. Like, I don't think this team's got like a title hope in the near future, but I, you know, do they want to get into the play next year? Do they want to be a more solid playoff team? Like, how aggressive are they going to be? I think these are like open, fair questions. And there's a lot of like eye of the beholder stuff for the roster. There's just a lot, I feel like, we do not understand about what sort of the plan is and how they're going to approach some stuff. And I think, as Mark, you said earlier, I think very astutely, like, the moves ultimately will tell you more than any press conference. Like GMs and coaches are going to lie their ass off because they're not going to disclose their exact plans and through press conferences or whatever. At least, and then maybe they'll offer more insight after the fact or whatever. But like, you know, you're going to, the moves and what they do with those kinds of things will indicate more than anything else. I just think this offseason is going to tell us a lot about what the Cavs sort of think they are. And it wouldn't shock me if you had like some significant roster turnover, so to speak.
Well, I guess just some Cavs news we didn't really touch upon at the top here. Lindsey Gottlieb is going to Southern Cal to become the next head coach of their program, for the women's program, for the next six seasons. And then there's an open spot on JB Bickerstaff's bench Do you think the Cavs kind of go out there and maybe find him a lead assistant? Maybe they try and tap Kenny Atkinson to make him his lead assistant, because I know there's talks about just like, I don't know. It's interesting to me to see who like JB taps to be like his interim head coach and like situations when he was away from the team and everything. But like, do they maybe go for Jordy Fernandez and try and like bring him up, or do they go get like a Kenny Atkinson out of LA and kind of make him like the associate head coach? You know, maybe as a little bit of a leash, just kind of similar to what the Hawks did this year with McMillan. And or do they go get like Brett Brown? They get like a retread who's just sitting around who has player development experience. Like, I don't know. What do you think the Cavs should do there? Do you think they should fill the space, or do you think they should go with another progressive hire like they did with Gottlieb?
Oh, that's first of all, congrats to Lindsay, because that's awesome. I listened to she came on your guys' pod a while back.
Yeah.
And I remember like I really enjoyed that episode. I've heard her interviewed a couple other times. Yeah, and she's phenomenal.
Be clear, she is very well thought of and like very well regarded in the organization.
Oh, yeah. This is a big loss for the Cavs.
It's again, like the Kobe Altman statement was like, how is not how an actual human being speaks, but like the sentiment was I think accurate. And she's very hands-on with a lot of different players. I mean, she worked a lot with Kevin Porter Jr. She's done a lot of work with Darius Garland. Like she's a really good coach, and this is a brain drain loss. This is for sure something that is going to, I think offer. I would love to know. This is like a whole other segue that I don't want to go down that hole, but like I think it'd be interesting to know like what her sort of experience has been like, and you know, 2 years in the league and then back to college, and I wonder like how sort of some of this played out for her and what her experience was kind of like how it's played out. But I personally, I think if you could get another like more inventive offensive guy to pair with JB as to JB to kind of be like the personality manager as your head coach, I don't think that's a bad way to go, because it does seem like personality management and that kind of work is so important to being a successful head coach now. If you could get like a really good assistant to like, you know, maybe there's like another Chris Finch type out there that hasn't been a head coach, like Jordy Fernandez is maybe that guy. You know, is there someone that in the organization you could empower more to do that stuff, whether it's like a JJ Outlaw? I mean, is there another like female coach that you want to throw like that? You know, you're obviously not going to get like an Ada Barnes or anyone like that, but like, is there someone of that ilk that you could bring in and have them do some stuff you want to go and make another kind of progressive hire and be a more welcomed organization? I don't think that's like I think you should explore every avenue, because I do think that's the kind of support system. If you want to support JB, it's not just going to be the players. It's, I think, finding someone that can help them kind of modernize the offense in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. Oh, sorry, I didn't cut you off.
No, you're good, Mark. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just, to that, like I would say too, because I really have liked JB from the, there's being a coach, you know, like not just in, like that, that's a very broad way to paint it, but just in terms of like, it feels like given how, and this is just my read and you guys can correct me on it if you feel differently, but I mean, I feel like he's handled this season as well as you can in terms of, you know, being a coach off the court and, you know, handling the locker room.
Oh yeah.
And just given
JB never signed up for this stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, just given everything that I know from him in Memphis and background, like great dude. I've always enjoyed hearing him speak and seeing him in pressers. He just seems really genuine. But like, point being, like you mentioned, Chris, like I do think, I've mentioned this to you guys as well, just from watching and in talking to some other guys who are analysts around the league, like the Cavs offense might be the least innovative and modern offense in the NBA. And that's a problem. Like, this offense should be, even just this year, I know that that there have been issues with injuries. The talent isn't, you know, phenomenal. But when you have Colin and Darius, and when Larry was healthy, and Jared Allen as a screener, like you have to get more out of them than the 27th ranked offense in the NBA, because they weren't much higher than that, even when they were performing well at the beginning of the year. We were just joking earlier on, like there really aren't second side actions that often. Like there isn't a lot of stuff going on off ball. And this is a lot of the problems that came up under Nate McMillan. Like Nate McMillan was great at having a good system that worked defensively and just being well prepared for every game. But with just the way that everything's going, you got to get more out of the team offensively, because right now they're not on track to be a team that is elite defensively. Like they could be good, but I don't know if they're going to be at a level where it can counteract being, you know, that poor offensively.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting to consider about Jared Allen that I haven't had a chance to like dive into yet in terms of film and numbers yet, just because of how blitzkrieg the schedule has sort of been, is like Jared Allen's like one of the things that has changed for him, and I think that has made his life harder, is that he's not like in Brooklyn, even before this season and in years past, he was getting so many of his shots right at the rim. Mm-hmm. Like he was getting a lot of dunks, a lot of like easy shots right at the rim. With the Cavs, he's still like shooting a pretty good percentage, but his shot profile has been bumped back to not like a little less at the rim and then more like in the short mid. So he's having to take some floaters, more contested shots. Like his shot diet has become harder. And like that's not maximizing what Jared Allen is. I think that has to be like figured out in some way. I don't know what the root cause of that is. Like some of it is surely spacing issues. Some of that is, you know, the lack of like guys that teams respect and everything in terms of when Kevin Love is out, and because Kevin Love, for all of the warts, like still draws like a lot of attention from defenses. Like there are just real concerns there that I don't know quite how to figure out. But like that's like one of those things where it's like, this isn't working as well as you sort of, I think, hope it would be based on that. It maybe the Cavs like would have like a pushback on that, but like is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think ultimately, I would go towards, I mean, most importantly, just hire the best coach available, whoever it is, and go from there. But I do think there is something to having somebody who is more of a, who can control more of the offense, or at least handle more of the offense, because it just hasn't been great this year.
No, it really hasn't. But Chris, I think that's going to have to do it for us. We don't want to upset our sponsors or our,
well,
friends.
You know what? We're vibing with Mark. Mark, yeah. I'm going to ask you this. I want to ask you both this as just a wrap up. If someone was insane enough to like give you the keys to one of these franchises.
Oh boy.
And you got to like start from one of these points and you had no interference, right? And which is like never going to happen. would you rather start from where Indiana is at, where it's sort of like a more formed piece and thing in the middle, or where the Cavs are at, where it's still relatively a blank slate that you could hit the eject button on a little earlier if you wanted to on certain things?
Ooh. So like you're saying that I'm coming in as like a new GM or
front
office?
You're the new president of basketball operations. You're here to cheat. You're here to get to maximize these teams and get the teams as high as possible. Would you rather start from where Indiana is with like the older but more established, better pieces? And would you rather have the Cavs where it's like a lot of young guys and it's more, relatively more of a blank canvas?
Wow. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think in some regards, if you take Indiana, like I really do think Indiana is a team that if they can iron out everything coaching wise and in the locker room, which again, I don't know how bad things are in the locker room. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, anything like groundbreaking, but point being, like if they can iron that out and get everyone on the same page and make one or two tweaks this offseason, I do think that's a team that could be like, you know, a second round plus team moving forward. But also with the Cavs, like to me as a person, like that's really intriguing to me. The idea, like, I mean, I've talked about Colin Sexton is a really talented player. You could make the argument that Darius maybe has a higher upside, and I wouldn't fight you on that. And more importantly, they're going to have a really good draft pick and a good draft. I like Jared Allen. He's young. Larry Nance is just a good vet to have around. Again, that's not something you're building around, but I just like that he's there. Isaac Okoro, I'm really intrigued with, especially as the season goes on. Like, yeah, I think I would be really interested in being with the Cavs and seeing what you can make happen there, because a lot of it's going to be riding on you. And I don't know, to me, that's exciting. I like the idea of like getting to build something from scratch and go from there. So I think I would pick the Cavs, even though I do think the Pacers are going to be saying relevant. I don't like saying relevant. Like, I just think in terms of like going farther in the playoffs, they're closer to that right now than the Cavs are for sure. But I don't know. I think the Cavs have a much brighter future than I ever thought they did post LeBron the first time, I should say.
I think I'd pick the Pacers, but maybe we need a little bit more of your optimism on the Dower lock.
I have been told multiple times by multiple fan bases and people who cover the league that I'm way too optimistic about things, but that's just who I am, man. I like finding the small things that are fun to root for.
Hey, that's all that matters, though, at the end of the day, as long as you're having fun, right?
Exactly.
I think, just for the record, I would pick the Cavs, but if I could turn, if I could flip Homer. Turner into a really high pick, if I could get one, if I knew that I could do that, then I'd probably be more intrigued with the Pacers. If I could, like, if, like, New Orleans, like, New Orleans isn't the right example because they have, like, the Steven Adams contract, but if they were like, hey, we're like six in the lottery, we'll trade you your 12th pick for six. Right, like I would do something like that probably.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'd explore that.
And then you take a swing, and like whether it's like Josh Giddey or whomever, like or
I am Scottie not Barnes. Taking Josh Giddey at six. That is
okay. Like okay, Scottie Barnes. Sure. If Kuminga falls to six, like I would swing in for the fences if I'm Indiana, and then I'm like we're because you have the infrastructure to like be patient with a high pick.
Yeah. No.
And
definitely.
The draft has to change for them at some point, right? Like it has been stinky for years.
Yeah. I'm not gonna make any excuses with that. The when they draft in the lottery, it's been good. When they do not draft in the lottery, it's been pretty hit or miss. So they really need to hit on this pick this year.
Extremely, extremely important. All right. That is gonna be it. Thanks again for if you're listening on the Lockdown Cavs feed for tuning in. Thanks for listening on the In Your Corner feed for tuning in there. We'll both be back with more podcasts in the very near future. One about a good basketball team, ish, good-ish.
A good, I don't know if I'm going to call them good, man.
Quality basketball team and yes. One team
hang the banner now.
That and one team, Evan, that we did that mention at the top.
Once playing tournament quality. Well,
and set a new has a new season-long losing streak at 11 in a row after Monday.
Don't worry, Chris. Colin Sexton avenged the Toronto Raptors not shaking his hand or some crap like that by knocking the Raptors out of the playoffs. Okay. I rolled my eyes so hard they detached my retinas. But Mark, tell everyone at home where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at mschindlernba on Twitter. You can find my work at premiumhoops.org and also over at indiecornrows.com and occasionally at Fear the Sword. I'm planning on writing something within the next week or two for FTS, so be looking for that. Thanks for having me on, guys. I always enjoy talking. Like, you guys are two of my favorite people to just hang out with. And once the pandemic is like not a pandemic anymore and it's regular life outside, I'm looking forward to actually hanging out and having some pizza that hopefully isn't made of rice and spinach. But
I forgot to talk about that.
Okay, yeah, real quick, Mark.
Oh yeah,
what's up with this pizza?
So, me and Caitlin Cooper do a monthly podcast called Two Questions Two Ah, and it's a reference to Pacers lore and. For whatever reason, I guess Caitlin and I have really weird food takes. I've been told that I have weird food takes. We don't have to dissect that right now. But that's just saving myself. But we had this one listener send in a really wild recipe that I thought was joking at first, but he was completely serious. So now, because it is the final regular season edition of Two Questions to tomorrow, Caitlin and I are simultaneously making this pizza concoction thing and live reviewing it, and I'm a little bit frightened for my life. The ingredients are sitting on my kitchen island just kind of staring at me, and I'm not excited about it, but hashtag for the culture, man, so I gotta do it. I'm looking forward to that, but not looking forward to what it's gonna taste like.
Well, if you guys want to see Mark gross himself out, go check.
I'm going to post progress pictures on Twitter. I'm very excited for that aspect of it to have you all live through it with me, but I'm not excited to actually eat it.
By all means, go give Mark a follow. It's great Pacers coverage, great NBA coverage. Also just some questionable food takes, but you're going to watch him suffer.
See, the whole goal is I throw out the really terrible food and fashion takes just to up my – it makes my NBA coverage look even better, because if you hate everything else that I'm posting, then you're just bound to like everything else. So
look, the Sox thing, it's like
– That's
like,
the Evan Damerel approach. I respect it.
Except I don't go quite that far. We do it the opposite way.
Evan like wrote two really good blog posts that were just sort of like, guys, this has been a bit.
Yeah, no, I wish people would actually read things, but, you know.
Whatevs, man. Internet, what a dumb place. All right, thanks everyone for listening. If Mark doesn't have a podcast again because of the pizza, I'm super sorry for that. Talk to y'all soon.